Herbie Hancock and Cantaloupe Island. From me, Alan Shipton, goodbye until next week at the same time. Now, here's Claire Martin with Jazz Lineup.
Hello. On today's show, an interview with award-winning pianist Neil Cowley and a preview of his much-anticipated new album, featuring sounds like this. More from Neil Cowley and his trio coming up soon, but let's start off with something from a brand new CD just released called Great Voices of Harlem. On this track, Gregory Porter sings from the heart on Robert Henry Timmons' classic Moanin'.
Find me moaning, I'm alone and crying the blue. I'm so tired of paying these dues. Everybody knows I'm moaning. Every evening find me moaning, 'cause of all the trouble I see. Life is a losing gamble to me. Everybody knows that I'm moaning. Lord, I spend many a day and night alone with my grief, and I pray, I really and truly pray, somebody will come and bring me relief. Every evening find me moaning, 'cause of all of the trouble I see. Life is a losing gamble to me. Everybody knows that I'm moaning.
For the growing army of fans of Gregory Porter, there he was in fine voice putting his personal stamp on Bobby Timmons' Moanin', and that was taken from a new album out on Discovery Records called The Great Voices of Harlem. Another exciting new release now, and this time from Matthew Housel, who is a Manchester-based trumpeter, composer and arranger, whose unique sound has been described as rain-streaked spiritual jazz by The Independent on Sunday. His new release is with the Gondwana Orchestra, who are Nat Birchall on saxophone, Lisa Mallett on flute, Keiko Kitamura on koto, Rachel Glabrin on harp, Taz Modi on piano, Gavin Barras on bass and Luke Flowers on the drums. All the compositions are written by Matthew, and this is the opening and title track called When the World Was One.
Thank you.
out now on Gondwana Records. That was trumpeter Matthew Housel with When the World Was Won, and that's the title track from his new release. You can hear Matthew play on the 15th of June at the Band on the Wall in Manchester. On the 16th, he's at the St Barnabas Chapel in Greek Street in Soho in London. And you can hear him at the second Love Supreme Festival at Glynne Place in Sussex, where he'll play on the 5th of July. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, on FM, online and on digital radio. Touch and Flee is the new recording from the Neil Cowley Trio and marks a defining moment in the evolution of the band. It's their bravest and most daring album to date and promises to be an altogether deeper listening journey. Before I talk to Neil about this new release, let's hear the opening track, and it's called Kneel Down.
Thank you.
from the new album Touch and Flee. That was Kneel Down, written by Neil Cowley. And I'm pleased to welcome Neil to the Jazz Lineup Studios. Hello, Neil.
Hi, Claire.
Well, this album is out on Monday, the 9th of June, on Name Jazz Records. Let's talk about the inspiration of the recording. You're quoted as saying that this is your concert hall album. You've got a band that belongs in a concert hall. Tell me about that.
Well, it was a sort of a defining moment, I suppose. We played at the end of 2012, we played the Barbican with a 24-piece string section that was put together for that night. And there was a moment when the lights kind of just flashed around the auditorium. And both Evan and I looked out, and everyone seemed to have their eyes shut, I think in a good way, not in a sleepy way. They had their eyes shut and they seemed to be sort of enjoying it in a kind of a blissful way. And it just felt, I think we thought that that was a moment we realised that people wanted to sit down and listen actually sort of in great depth to what we were doing. Mm. So we just, it signified a change and actually led to a scrapping of a whole album. And our last album was called The Face of Mount Molehill. And I think I was guilty of writing The Face of Mount Molehill Part 2 in some way, you know. Okay. And it got halfway through last year and I sat down at the end of rehearsal and I just said, guys, I'm just not feeling this at all. I'm not happy with this. It feels like I'm not really saying anything. Mm. And they said, well, look, cool, just, you know, take your time, just scrap it, you know, start again.
just scrap it,
you know. They didn't hesitate, didn't scrap it, start again. And you know, and we talked about those elements more those sort of the, you know, long journeys of harmony and melody rather than, you know, our usual riff-tastic sound. And so I went away and I find writing hard anyway. I find the whole compositional thing quite traumatic. And so I'd already done it for 6 months to no avail. So I did it for another 6 months and then we came up with Touch and Flee.
And a credit to you because you filled the Barbican. That's a big place to fill and, you know, lots of musicians to pay.
Yeah.
It was a huge success. So, you know, well done on that.
Thank you, yeah.
Well, let's talk about that very tight relationship and honest relationship you've got with your trio. You know, to be supported through a change like that is a credit to them. It's bassist Rex Horan and drummer Evan Jenkins. Tell me a bit more about them.
Well, they actually know each other from Australia. They're both Antipodeans. Evan's a Kiwi and Rex is an Aussie. But they both met at Perth Conservatoire in Western Australia. And then they both went on their various musical journeys and ended up in London. I think they shared accommodation. I think even at one point, Evan left the house and Rex moved into it. So they're very networky. So, yeah, we're a strange British jazz trio because there's only me in it who's actually British. But, yeah, they're old friends. And Evan and I have known each other for 10 to 15 years playing in various outfits. And I think it's important to keep the same lineup. We have our, like any band, we have our sense of humour. And I think that's important to keep you sane on the road.
Sure.
I go insane on the road generally. And they, I do. I'm fragile in that area, I find.
Oh, I can't imagine that.
No, I'm
boisterous and great fun.
Well, boisterous and
give
great
good
fun.
Bus.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, boisterous and good fun on the outside, but sort of crumbling inside, perhaps. But it's just, I just find it's tough. It's tough being away from home for your family and all those things.
Sure.
And they keep me sane.
Let's talk about this artwork then before we talk about the sound, because in a very interesting front on the record. Looks like somebody's beard being touched by the hand of a dummy.
Yes.
Is that reflective of the personality of the group? My daughter went, what's that?
Yeah, some people are creeped out by it. It's actually Rex's beard. Rex has got a fantastic jazz beard. I mean, he's been growing it for about a year and a half now. It's enormous. And we were doing a photo shoot for the album, and there was an artificial hand on the floor, and I picked up and put it on his beard. And there's a reason behind it. The reason is that I was reading an article, I think it was in The Guardian, and it was talking about this surprising development in Japanese culture, actually, where there's a certain section of society, generally under 40s, that are enjoying physical contact less and less. And they go to classes in order to rectify this. So they have these classes where they're taught to, you know, engage with each other and just touch and just understand
Lovely.
Each other's physicality.
That's very nice.
It is nice. And I just thought it was an amazing development in such an advanced country, such an industrious country, that, if you like, Mother Nature's going, well, you know, let's develop past, you know, being in constant contact. Let's not touch each other at all. And let's, you know, almost like a reaction to the amount of people on this planet, you know. So it was just, I just thought it was a fascinating development that people are actually having to go to class to touch each other.
Touchy-feely classes.
And touch and flee, it was born, you know.
I'm glad you've explained that now.
I'm sorry.
Now I will look at that differently, that album now. So you're talking about sort of confidence on the road and confidence as a composer. Do you feel now, after this album, you have gained some more confidence in your writing?
I think it was a crossroads. I think many artists can make the mistake, perhaps, of not pushing themselves. And I do feel like I pushed myself. So I feel it's a moment of, I mean, there's nothing worse than when your record label comes up and says, I love your brave new direction. You know, you realise you're in trouble then. But they have said that, and I think it was important to do that. It feels like a very confident step, a scary step, but a confident step. And I do feel very comfortable with my writing. I think that's true. I think over a period of albums, you start to feel confident about what you can do.
Yeah,
and this feels like that moment. Perhaps.
Let's hear a bit more music from the album. Let's talk about Couch Slouch. I can't imagine that's about you.
No.
Pants in your pants.
No.
So what's Couch Slouch about?
I live in an area where there are lots of families with kids growing up, and this just seems to be the constant conversation at school gates is about how many couch slouches they have in their families.
From the new album Touch and Flee, that was Couch Slouch by Neil Cowley and the trio. And I'm talking to Neil. Let's talk about the producer of this album, Dom Monks. Now, he's quite famous, isn't he? Tell me a bit more about him.
Well, he's Grammy nominated, which is a nice
thing. Good.
Yeah, it's very good. He's a wonderfully precocious young man in the sense that he's barely 30 and he's got a real old head on him. He was kind of educated, I suppose, by Ethan Johns. Ethan Johns is a very famous producer, produced Kings of Leon and Laura Marling, a fantastic rock and pop producer. His father was Glyn Johns, who produced The Who, Jimi Hendrix, all sorts of Rolling Stones. So there's that heritage. I think Ethan has taken Dom under his wing, certainly through his apprenticeship at Real World Studios, Peter Gabriel's place. And Dom believes passionately in recording to tape, which is always an interesting process. It makes you record in a very different way. I think, you know, with so much digital opportunity available to you, you can cut and paste too much sometimes. It's nice to just have that discipline of recording, getting to the end and then seeing what you've got. There are mistakes. He encourages, you know, to keep the mistakes. He doesn't say a lot. He says about 3 words an hour. And you can sit there in agony waiting for him to finish a sentence. But I like it. His ears are so busy.
And is he a jazz leaning? Has he had?
No.
I mean, why choose somebody that's not a jazz person?
That's interesting. I think because I have this thing, this idea, certainly early on, that we were competing in the whole marketplace, not just the jazz one, if you take my drift. And I felt that I wanted to make records in... expensive places is a bad phrase, but I wanted to make them in those best studios. I you know, having some experience of playing on pop and various albums, I enjoyed the experience of being in a big studio. It makes you sort of puff out your chest a bit, feel a bit cocksure. Mm. And I wanted to have that when we went in. And Dom is just another, you know, it's an extension of that.
Mm. I'm just talking about more from his kind of, his listening ability and his background in jazz. If you're improvising, I mean, how do you take notes from a producer who doesn't really understand the implications of... improvisation.
That's the question. I mean, do we improvise? Everyone's always asked us that. Do you improvise? Well, we do, actually, but some say less than others. I like Dom's approach to listening. He just sits back. He listens to whole performances. He listens to development of performance. He listens to how much. He bases all his decisions on emotion. We've even just had the cutting of some vinyl. It went over to a German pressing plant and it came back and it was a bit dead. They'd sort of over-polished the vinyl, and you can lose a bit of high-end, lose a bit of emotion. And he was trying to engage with this guy, this pressing plant guy, saying, no, we've just lost some emotion. And the guy wasn't understanding him at all. But I love the fact that that's where Dom's coming from. He just wants to hear emotion.
Mm.
So that's what I want him to hear, and that he's my perspective. I take care of the noodles.
Well, you managed to fill the Barbican, and that was brilliant hard work from all your team. How are you doing in Europe, and are you pushing towards trying to get established or getting a name in the US, which is... That's a hard leap to do, but Europe especially, how are you doing?
Well, I mean, US wise, we have a specific US agent. Again, I mean, you're talking about non-jazz. He's with Windish, which are more of a sort of a pop and rock agent. A guy called Todd out there. And I mean, I think every artist is... perhaps particularly in jazz, is looking to develop in America. It feels like the home. It feels like you want to go back and take the coals back to Newcastle to a certain extent. And Europe's always been a good place for us. I mean, we'll be touring this album in Germany and France. We do club dates. We do good festivals. We'll do, you know, in time. We're doing Montreux this year in Switzerland.
Wow, great.
Yeah. I mean, we've got actually, last year we did Montreux and they stuck it out on DVD, which is, I guess, having watched those wonderful Montreux jazz programmes on Channel 4 in my youth, where I watched every amazing jazz artist I'd ever seen perform on those stages, to perform there and then have a DVD out of it. It just does feel like a magic.
Everybody got that for Christmas, did they, last year?
Yeah, there's enough spare copies.
Let's hear a final track from this CD then. This is called The Art. Tell me a little bit about The Art.
It's one that actually did survive the cull, if I'm really honest, because it was the only track that managed to move from the scrapped album to finished album. And it's just me on my own, generally speaking, on the piano with a touch of bass. I suppose it's me at my... It's actually my upright piano from home. I wheeled it in from my little studio at home into Rack Studios in North London, where we recorded it. And it's the same piano I recorded Lament on, which is another piano solo piece. I suppose it's me at... most similar state to when I'm writing, because I write on that piano. I write in great solitude, and it feels like you're getting a piece of that when you hear this, I think.
Brilliant. Well, let's hear it from the new album by Neil Calley and the trio, and it's called The Art. The album's called Touch and Flee. Lovely to talk to you.
Lovely to talk to you, Claire. Thank you. Thank you.
The Art from the album Touch and Flee, out this Monday on Name Jazz. And my thanks to Neil for coming into the Jazz Lineup studios. For more information on Neil and the band, check out the link on the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, on FM, online and on digital radio. Well, on this week's Jazz on 3 with Jez Nelson on Monday night at 11, he's got some very special music from British Treasures Loose Tubes, who recently reunited, and he'll play some performances from new BBC Radio 3 commissions. Well, here's Jez to tell us a bit more about it.
Hello, Claire. It's Jez Nelson here. On this week's Jazz on 3, I've got live music from a very special gig, the reunion of British big band Loose Tubes, back at their spiritual home of Ronnie Scott's in London after 24 years. Now, I was there for their actual comeback gig at the Cheltenham Jazz Festival. They had 700 people on their feet, giving them a standing ovation. A few days later at Ronnie Scott's, it was even better, up close and personal with one of the greatest big bands ever to come out of the UK. And their music is such a joyful mix of things. Everything in there, I mean, little bits of salsa, reggae, funk, of course, a very strong influence of South African music. And all the time, that kind of very clever but very accessible and fun and funny writing coming through. Now, on Jazz on 3, you'll be able to hear some new music written especially for this concert, commissioned by Radio 3. But we're going to hear now an original piece from the Tubes back in the 1980s, written by John Ecott. This piece is called Sunny. We'll be right back.
Legendary British big band Loose Tubes recently reunited at their spiritual home, Ronnie Scott's in London. And that was one of their greatest hits, Sunny, written by John Ecott. And it contained all the fun and brilliant musicianship that they've been bottling up over the last 24 years since they last played together. For more Loose Tubes action, listen to Jez on Jazz on 3 this Monday at 11 o'clock. That's nearly it for Jazz Lineup this week. I'll be back next week and I'm joined by journalist Stephen Graham talking about the rebirth of the cool and how the music of the cool school Miles Davis period matters again and how the sounds of players like Lee Konitz, Warren Marsh and Lenny Tristano are being echoed in the music played by new bands on the jazz scene. Also on the show, Kevin Ajonra interviews American pianist Mark Carey. But to finish tonight, let's hear from one of the winners of this year's Parliamentary Jazz Awards, which were held a few weeks ago. And it's the Instrumentalist of the Year, clarinetist Aaron Gosch. Congratulations also go to all the winners at this year's event, including singer Christine Tobin, photographer David Redfern, who received the well-deserved Services to Jazz Award, and Jamie Cullum, who nabbed the Jazz Media Award. For more info on all the winners, check out the link on the Jazz Lineup webpage via the Radio 3 website. Well, from Aaron Gosch's album, A South Asian Suite, this is Gypsies of Rajasthan. From me, Claire Martin, until next time, bye-bye.
Gypsies of Rajasthan by Aaron Gosch, ending this week's Jazz Lineup. It was presented by Claire Martin and produced in Glasgow by Sushil K. Dade. Hello, I'm John Shea. Welcome to Saturday evening on BBC Radio 3. Opera on 3 beckons. After this, news from Donald MacLeod.
Get to know the man who brought us this and this and this and this. A 150 years ago this week, Richard Strauss was born. I'm Donald MacLeod, and I'm playing my part in the celebrations as I introduce Richard Strauss as Composer of the Week, starting on Monday at noon, with another chance to hear the programme at 6:30 each evening. And why not listen in glorious HD sound? Go to the Radio 3 website for more details, where you'll also find the Richard Strauss Radio 3 Opera Guides available as podcasts. Richard Strauss, 150, here on BBC Radio 3.
Where it's now 6:45 and time for Opera on 3, which this evening comes live from the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden. It's presented by Sarah Moore Peach.
Thank you, John. Hello and welcome to Opera on Three live from Covent Garden. At the end of the evening, 16 Carmelite nuns will come face to face with death at the guillotine in revolutionary France, a true story which became the basis of Poulenc's 1956 opera Dialogue des Carmélites, Dialogues of the Carmelites. En route to that final devastating scene, Poulenc's ravishing score is a blend of the sensual and the sacred, and it's conducted for the first time by Sir Simon Rattle, who's loved it since he first saw it. The British soprano Sally Matthews sings the young novice Blanche de la Force, the opera's central character. She's a terrified young aristocrat who joins the Carmelite order of nuns to find peace and is eventually forced to face her fear of death as her fellow nuns choose martyrdom at the scaffold. Poulenc's own devout Catholic faith underpins the devotion to truth and the love of the divine which unites each of the characters on their different harrowing journeys. Sally Matthews is joined in a stellar cast by Deborah Pulaski, Anna Prohaska, Sophie Koch, Emma Bell, Jan Baron, Thomas Allen and Alan Oak. The production we're seeing tonight here at the Royal Opera House is by the acclaimed Canadian director Robert Carson, first staged 7 years ago in Amsterdam. A few days ago, just after the dress rehearsal, I asked him what had attracted him to this opera back then.
It's such an incredible piece. I always love operas which go to places that you don't expect them to go. And we're used to opera being about Eros and Thanatos, famously sex, erotic love and death. But of course, this piece is about love and death, but not erotic love. There's no love interest conventionally. There's all kinds of other love that's explored, and of course, death. But the music that Poulenc composed is in such a particular service because, of course, his faith was coming back to him and he was exploring that in a very intense way. Yet through the doubt, there's a lot of doubt in the piece and a lot of how our lives contain so much fear. So I think that that's something that I found very unique, and so it was a way to explore all of that.
The director, Robert Carson, and we'll be hearing more from him later on this evening. His staging, which has been designed by Michael Levine, is sparse. There's no set, just a few furniture props, like the nuns' workbenches, which are brought on and off between scenes. Fiona Maddox, the opera critic, writing in The Observer last week, described it as scrubbed and minimalist, and Rupert Christensen in The Telegraph called it blessedly simple and intelligent as a production. I asked the soprano Sally Matthews, who sings Blanche, what it was like performing in such a bare environment.
There's no big set and there's no fluffy chairs and there's no, you know, thrones. It becomes about the people and it becomes about who you're on stage with. Actually, you don't notice the space because you're so with the other person. And that's what it makes you do, really. It's how it is and how it would be. And I think Robert was very brave in deciding that and that it would work. But it does. I think that's the beauty of it, that, you know, there isn't anything there. And what does come on, comes on and comes off without even noticing it. That, to me, is also like magic.
The soprano Sally Matthews, and we'll have more from her later as well. You're listening to Opera on Three live from the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden, with me, Sarah Moore-Peach, for a production of Poulenc's Dialogue des Carmélites. And my guest throughout, and particularly in the interval, will be Jeremy Sams, who's with me now, director, translator and fount of knowledge on all things Poulenc. Jeremy, welcome.
Hi there.
When was the very first time you saw Dialogue des Carmélites?
Gosh, I think it must have been in the 70s in Paris. Firstly, Lot used to do Blanche a lot. And I saw Régine Crespin doing the old prioress. She started, originally did Madame Lidoine, the second prioress, but she sort of graduated to the older parts. But before that, I'd worn my box set out, which we all had, the Pierre Devaux original recording, which is really quite rough, actually, if you listen to it. It's got some fantastic stuff. The choral singing isn't too hot. But that old box set with the cross on the front, which I discovered the other day and scratched completely to bits.
And much loved. I mean, why is this such a favourite of yours? You said to me earlier as we were making our way up to the box that it is your favourite opera.
Well, I think it is. I mean, it's weird to say that all human life is here, because in a sense it couldn't be more